and a good Nechodesh. Okay, we are on Kuf Chav Gimel. We're on the back end of Kuf Chav Beis Amud Beis. We're starting at 122b. We're going to be starting a little bit halfway down the page. Okay, a great little sefer I found, Rabbi Przeworski from Kew Garden Hills. I remember when he put out his first sefer. Actually handed me the first sefer. And okay. Anyway, we are going off a Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about Orasim Kibbisarim, where the hides of animals are like the flesh of an animal. Meaning by an avela, normally that's not the case, meaning the hide is considered a separate entity, but when it comes to certain parts of an animal or certain animals, the hide is soft and edible, and therefore it has the status of the flesh itself. Now, in terms of shrutim, in terms of the crawling animals, so the Torah mentions that there are eight of them that give off tumah once they're dead. And the Mishnah says that of those, some of them have a nice, soft hide. If you look back in the Mishnah, Kuf Chav Beis Amud Aleph on 122a, so the Mishnah brings down a machlokas, the or shel tachzal, you have an or hanakav akoch v'altav v'chomet, the hide of the anakah, the koach v'altav, and the chomet, those are four of the shratzim. So those are going to be soft, edible, and therefore are going to give off tumah just like the flesh of that animal. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ha'atak kechulda, v'kulon she'avdan she'hilach mem k'dei avodah t'aron chutz me'or adam. And according to Rav Yochan ben Nuri, Shmona Shratim Yeshlam Oros, all eight of them have a hide, meaning, and the hide is distinct from the flesh. If you want, I mean, I'll pass this around. It's a great, just in general, you should run through the sefer. Some of it is very interesting. Anyway, some of it is a total attack on my other friend. What's my other friend's name? Yeah, Rabbi Slifkin. Yeah. So anyway, take a look at this. So you want to know what the Shmona Shratzim are? So I say that they're crawling animals. So as I mentioned, the Torah mentions eight of them. Here, if you take a look, he actually goes through what he believes to be the definitions of them. Everything here is sourced. He bases everything on either Rishonim or on contemporary zoology. Okay, the ones that we're talking about in question, the anaka, he translates as a hedgehog. The koach is some lizard. He calls it the harden. Halta'a, another type of lizard. Chomet is a slug. He's got pictures as well, right? And also he goes for a snail, for the chomet. And the tinshamis is the mole. Okay? Your pictures of the day. Okay, I'll leave it up here, anyone who wants to take a look at it. So anyway, but from our Gemara standpoint, okay, the Tanu Rabbanan, okay, am I right? Okay, yeah. Ora Anaka, Tanu Rabbanan, Tamein L'Rabbos, Orasein Kibbisaram. So we have a brice over here like the Mishnah that regarding some of these creatures, the hide is like the flesh. Yachal Afilu Kulan. Now, there's Shmona Shratzim, and they're all categorized together in Parsha Shmini, right? Perik Yud Aleph. Psukim Chavtes Lamin. Okay? So the Gemara just wants to know. In other words, the Braisa wants to know. Why not all eight? Tamar Lomar Eila, because if you look at the Pasuk, it says Eila. There's a reference of the word Eila in the Pasuk. I don't have a Chumash in front of me. Anyway, take a look. Vaha Eila Kuluk Siva. The Gemara says, yeah, but the word Eila seems to be going on all of them. Okay? So the Gemara says, "Akul k'siva amarav l'minehu hivsika inyan." Yeah, but it says the words l'minehu, meaning the pasuk says, "Vezelachem atame b'sheretz hasheretz al ha'aretz achalad ha'achbar v'hatzav l'minehu." Right now, that means we can put a comma right there, and then it says, "Ha'naka achomet v'haltav v'achomet v'antinsham." So, in other words, even in the pasuk themselves, there is a division between pasuk chavtes and pasuk lamed. Okay, good. So v'lichshav namitin shamas. So the Gemara says, okay, but now I'll ask you a simple question. Because of the eight, our Mishnah only lists some of them, and the Gemara now is reasoning that the reason why is because the chalad, achbar, and Sav is then bracketed off with the words Leminehu. So that means leave that out. That's Pasuk Chavtes. And only go with Pasuk Lamed. Anaka, hedgehog. Kawach, lizard. Halta, another type of lizard. Chomet, slug and or snail. So, but then also include Tin Shamas. Include them all as well. Amar Shmuel Yitzchak, Rav Tanahu v'tana Tin Shamas. So the Gemara says, first of all, Rav is a Tana. By the way, that line by itself is interesting, meaning we always see it in the context of Rav Tanu Palag, meaning Rav has the authority to argue with a Tana. Here the Gemara says Rav Tanahu, meaning he's a Tana. Okay, usually you don't need to identify who is and who isn't a Tana. It's kind of self-evident, but our Gemara over here clearly, obviously Rav is on the border, meaning he was a student of Rav Yehuda Anasi, student of Rabbi Chia. So you could have put him on the side of the Amoraim. The Gemara says, no, he's a Tana. Tana hu v'tani tin shamas. And Rav, in his Braisa, says, yeah, include tin shamas. Correct. V'atani didan lo tani tin shamas. Yeah, but our Mishnah doesn't include that. I'm Rav Shish, b'rei d'ravidi, tana de didan, savalak Rav Yehuda, de'azo basar gishta, uv'gishta, de'halta kemiflagi. So the Gemara says, yeah, but our Mishnah doesn't agree with Rav. Clearly, our Mishnah does not include Tin Shamas because our Mishnah follows Gishta, the way it actually feels. Meaning that which are included, which are not included. So our Mishnah basically says, go for a feel. Meaning feel the skin of these animals. If they're soft and edible, not that we're going to eat them because they're not kosher. But if they're soft and they're edible, so then they're included in the list. And if they're not, they're not included in the list. And presumably your lizards, your slugs, oh, this is delicious, your hedgehogs, so they're going to have a soft skin. So orosem kibisaram, the hide is going to be like the basar. And meanwhile, the tinchemis, which he translates as a mole, okay, correct or not, I'm not here to say, but that has a harder hide, and that's not going to be considered, fleshed. Right, that's correct. Meaning the Shabbos seems to be a totally different issue.
And even though you can sort of resolve it from that.
Right, correct. Do they bruise, do they not bruise? Right. Kulan she'ivdan. Okay, one more little piece of Gemara before we move on to the next sugya. The helichin lo helich lo, meaning in all of these cases, if you work over the hide, that's it, it's no longer mekabel tuma. Meaning even the softer hides, and even those hides in our Mishnah enumerated, which are soft and considered flesh-like, nevertheless, once you start to work the hide, so at that point in time now, it's no longer mekabel tuma. V'hatani Rabbi Chia, the Gemara says, yeah, but I have a brace of Rabbi Chia, which is ozen chamor shetal al kupaso tahora. I take the ear of a donkey. Now, the ear of the donkey has got, it's soft, cartilage, but it's soft, and it's got a little bit of hide over the top. So Rabbi Chia's Braisa says, once I hang it as a handle for a basket, so now it's tahora. But in other words, I have to actually manipulate it. I need to manufacture it as a handle. Tala afagav dolo hilech lo talach hilech in lo hilech lo. So the Gemara says it sounds like that all you need to do is just simply place it on the basket, and that would be enough, even though we didn't work it over. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says very simply, look, lo tala, no. If you didn't hang it on the basket, hilach in lo hilach lo, so then you need to work it over. Meaning, if I'm going to use it and attach it to the basket, that means now I'm no longer interested in it as a piece of meat. I'm clearly interested in it as a hide, and so therefore it's no longer considered basar. If, however, I don't hang it on the basket, but I just simply work it over, meaning like I would with any piece of leather, so then it is no longer susceptible to tumah. Kama kedei ibor. How long do you need to work it over? Now, I'm not a tanner, so I don't fully understand the process of tanning, but basically they would spread it out, they would walk over it. How long do you need to be walking on top of it? So I'm Rav Huna, I'm Rabbi Yana, Arba'a Milin, 4 mil. Time of the Gemara was always measured by how long it would take to walk. How long does it take to walk 4 mil? 1 mil takes approximately 18 minutes. 18 times 4, so 72 minutes. Okay, So a little over an hour of treatment, of tanning, in order for now to be considered hide and not considered to be nevela. So, Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Reish Lakish, right, a little change of girsa, Legabel, Ulitfila, Ulintilas Yadayim Arba Milan. Vis-a-vis three halachas, do we say that the measurement is 72 minutes? Number one, Legabel, Rashi. Halashi Sasobatar Vahushi, Vahushil Balabais, Vesarach Lamayim Lahatbil Kelav, Yatriachatmo Arba Milam Achi Agila Mikva, Vyatbil. Let's say you were asked, not asked, paid to knead the dough of somebody, and he says to you, I want you to do it b'tahara, in a state of purity. And the bowl that you have currently right now is not tahor. So how long do you need to look for, meaning, in other words, even though you're hired, and the expectation was to do it in a state of tahara, and right now there's no water around, there's no mikvah around, so how far do you need to travel in order to tova the bowl? Or do you simply say, look, I'm really sorry, there's no mikvah around. So right, Rashi says, V'tzarech l'mayim l'hatba kele v'yatrich atzmo arba milim. So you should walk 4 mil atche gele mikvah. V'yatbil v'yos mikanein alav l'truch min astam. Elim ki noto lo balabai schar halicha. After that point in time, meaning after 72 minutes, you then can turn to the balabais and say, look, I got to tack on an additional cost. Meaning, when you give them the bill, you say, here's the bill for kneading your dough, plus you asked me to tovel the clean. It took more than 72 minutes to walk. Okay, so I'm also adding another bill, and that's, of course, the travel and the tolls. Okay, that's number one. Number two, tefillah. So what does that mean? So again, look at Rashi. Hamahalach b'derech v'gamar b'lima v'rotzel alom mi ba'od yom. Yimesh b'es ha'knesel slafana v'ad arba milim yachriach v'yelech sham k'dei she'is pala. So from Rashi, it sounds like, basically, how far you're on your way traveling. And you pretty much said, okay, that's it. Right? I'd like to break now. But, right, from Rashi, it seems like we're talking about Maariv. Seems that way. Right? But, davening with a minyan. Significance of davening with a minyan. So, if there's a shul up to 4 mil ahead, so continue walking to the shul up to 4 mil ahead. Anything beyond that, you don't need to daven in a shul. You could daven be a chidus. You could daven by yourself. That seems to be the pshat according to Rashi. We are short on time. Take a look at Tosfos. It's very interesting. Tosfos makes other suggestions in terms of what the Gemara means when it says tefillah. And finally, Netilas Yadayim. Rashi says la achila ve'en lo mayim v'yesh mayim lafano v'sofar ba'milim yamtim machi agil lamayim. So Rashi says we're talking about washing for bread. And Rashi says that if you're traveling up ahead and there's water 4 mil up to 4 mil ahead in order to wash your hands, so you should walk the 4 mil in order to wash your hands. Again, strongly encourage you to take a look at Tosfos, where Tosfos gives other suggestions in terms of what this means. Okay. Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak. Aibu Amra the Arba'e Amar Ba. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I'm going to make two corrections. First of all, you quote this in the name of Rabbi Abahu, incorrect. It's not Rabbi Abahu, it's Aibu. Okay? Aibu, I believe, was the father of Rav, right? I believe that's correct. So that's number one. And number two is, assuming we're talking about the same Aibu, and number two is that it wasn't three halachas, but it was four halachas. What's the fourth halacha? V'chad minayhu avoda. Right? The avoda over here doesn't mean temple service. It means our Mishnah. Meaning that you take a soft hide, any one of the soft hides that were mentioned in the Mishnah, and you work it over. It's now considered hide. It's not considered buster anymore. How long do you need to work it over? 72 minutes, like we discussed. I'm Rav Yossi Bar Bichanin Loshanu, Alafanav Avalacha, Afilo Mil Echad Eino Chozer. This obligation to walk 4 mil, according to Rashi, 4 mil for davening B'tzibur, 4 mil for washing your hands in order to eat bread. this requirement is only walking the distance in front of you. However, if the requirement is, let's say you're going on a journey, and now you passed a shul, and now you said, you know what, I'm tired. How much back do you need to walk? So not a mil. Meaning it's understood. It's understood. Meaning you're on en route to go to a particular designation. And now if you have to backtrack, that's obviously going to be every mile you backtrack means that you're going to have to walk twice that amount in order to get back to this point over here. And it's interesting because you could have made the argument that you should go 2 mil back, right? Which would mean 4 mil up ahead. But even that's not required. Meaning not even 1 mil do you need to backtrack in order to daven b'tzib, or you could daven right here b'yechidus. So Rav Yaakov Amar Amina, milhu de'nechozer, hapachos mi'milchozer. So the Gemara points out, okay, but at least you see over here that if it's less than a mil, then you do need to backtrack. Okay? And by the way, all this is a halacha, meaning to daven b'tzibur if you're traveling. If there's a shul 4 mil up ahead, so then you need to travel up to 4 mil in order to daven b'tzibur. If there's a shul less than 1 mil behind you, so you need to backtrack less than 1 mil. And then there's a further discussion, which we're not going to engage in right now. When we're talking about distance, do we mean distance time or do we mean distance? Meaning that we are talking in the context of walking 18 minutes / 1 mil, which on foot, that's the same. But nowadays we have cars, we have automobiles. So do we not look at the distance? Do we just look at the time? Right? Okay. Another discussion to be had. Not for now. Tan Rabbanan, Ligyon ha'over mimakom ha'makom ha'menachlan sabayis, ha'bayis tameh. She'in lecha kol ligyon ve'ligyon she'in lo kama karkaflin. The Gemara punctuates this entire discussion with the following. We learned in our Mishnah that when it comes to human hide, so the human hide, orosem kibbis saram, is like the flesh. Now, we had a discussion yesterday in the Gemara with Ula. Ula says that Min HaTorah, the skin, human skin, is not like human flesh. And the tumah of the human flesh, I'm sorry, the tumah of human skin is only a tumah de Rabbanan. Right, go back to yesterday's daf, review yesterday's daf for that discussion. The Gemara over here records that if you have a legion, meaning an army, that's going and invading into a city, so you're going to assume now that every house is tamei. Why? Because what they have is they have kama karkaflin. If you take a look at Rashi, or Rosh Adam meis, v'zela machshefos b'mochama. I believe the expression is a talisman, where basically they come in with sticks. It sounds very primitive. They come in with sticks, with staffs, the human head on the top of the staff, and they're going into every house with this human head on the staff. And that human head is going to give off tumah. Why is it going to give off tumah? Basically, because of what we learned back in the Mishnah. Arosem kibis saram. Because the skin is like the basar, so therefore it's going to give off tumah. Now, it is interesting because it sounds like from this discussion that which skulls are they using? Jewish skulls? Non-Jewish skulls? I mean, the Brisa doesn't designate, doesn't specify. Sounds like we're talking about even non-Jewish skulls. Now, as I mentioned before, machlokis tanayim, whether or not the remains of non-Jewish bodies give off tumas ohel, sounds like this brisa is of the position that the hide flesh of non-Jewish bodies gives off tumas ohel. Al titma sharei karka flosha Rabbi Yishma munach barosh malachim. And then the brisa says, and don't think this is crazy. Meaning this is not crazy. In fact, we know, I mentioned this yesterday, the Brisa says it outright, think about Rabbi Shmuel, meaning Rabbi Shmuel, one of the Asara Haruge Malchus, we read about in Yom Kippur, we read about on Tisha B'Av. So, right, the story goes is that he was very good looking, he was attractive. And what they did is they peeled off his skin off his body before they killed him, and they actually used it as a talisman. Right, karkaflo sharabi shma munach barosh malachim. It's you go to Rome and you'll see the skin of Rabbi Shmuel, and it's not as primitive and it's not as crazy as you would think it is. Okay, Adkan. All right. Next Mishnah with the ensuing Gemara discussion. To a certain degree, it's good that we don't have a lot of time. as we'll go through this quickly. We'll try to go through this quickly. Obviously, we're going to fall behind. But basically, it goes like this. All right. We are now leaving the very sad and tragic world of human skin and human hide, and we return now back to just a regular case of animal hide. Okay, what's the basic guidelines? So when we talk about the hide of the animal, that's not the animal itself. Okay? The animal itself, that's going to give off tumah, meaning the flesh, the basar. That's going to give off tumah. If the animal was not shechted properly, it's going to give off tumas nevela. But the hide of the animal, that's different. That's a hide. Okay. Nevertheless, while the hide is still on the animal itself, so it's really one of two things. Number one, it's a shomer. It serves to protect the animal, and so therefore, it's mitame and mitstareif. It imports tumah, it exports tumah, and it also, if there's a shear necessary, it'll add to the shear as well. Okay, that's number one. Number two, it could also serve as a yad. Okay, once it's a shomer, you don't really need it to be a yad, because a shomer is everything. But it also serves as a yad, meaning how do I pick up the piece of meat? I grab it by the hide. Okay, so the hide also could turn as a yad as well. Now, in the act of flaying the hide off the animal, the Mishnah will basically deal with the following. I am now pulling the hide off the animal. At what point precisely? This Mishnah is going to be extremely precise. At what point precisely do we say that the hide is disconnected from the animal so that it's no longer tame? Okay? And the Mishnah now is going to work with unbelievable precision. Domesticated, non-domesticated. Kosher animal, non-kosher animal. Right? All animals give off tumas nevela. Daka uvegasa. Small, large. Lishatiach. If I'm gonna flay the animal for purposes of a shatiach. Okay? Now, basically, hide of an animal, I mean, we're all wearing shoes right now, we all understand, is used for various items, various objects that are manufactured. The Mishnah here is going to be talking basically about two items that are going to be used out of the hide of the animal. Number one is the shatiach, carpet, a bed cover. Okay. There, I want to strip off the animal with the maximum amount of area, of actual square footage of the animal. So what they would do, okay, it'd be great if I had an animal right now in the room, I don't, is that they would make an incision and cut lengthwise along the belly of the animal from the neck all the way down to the bottom, and then they would basically now spread it out, meaning take this side, pull it out, take this side, pull it out, and flay it that way, and that's where you would get maximum area. Okay, that's what's called shatiach. Okay. Another thing that they would do is that they would basically cut make the incision around the neck and start pulling it down. Why they would do that? So that's what the Mishnah calls chemes. What's it called? A thermos, not a thermos. So when you go on a long trip. A flask, right? A flask or a wineskin. And so basically now, you would pull it down so basically still had the form of the animal. And then what they would do, obviously, there would be holes for where the arms are and for where the legs are. Okay, but they would stitch up those holes and obviously it would stitch up the bottom and it served as a great flask, as a great thermos. Okay? So those are one of two ways that they would use the hide of the animal. So here the first case of the Mishnah is shatiach. Now in the case of shatiach, says the Mishnah, kidei achiza. Okay, that means like this. Remember, shatiach is an incision from the neck down, and then they would pull away the skin. So kidei achiza. Now, as long as you could still grab it, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, that's going to be two tfachim doubled over. So it's basically, it's two tfachim that you pull off, then doubled over, and you could hold it now with your hand. At that point in time, meaning anything prior to that point in time, it serves as a yad. It serves as a handle. After that, it no longer serves as a yad. I'll explain better as we go through the Gemara. Ulechemes, now when it comes to this thermos, ad shiyafshit es hachazeh. There, remember, incision around the neck, and you start pulling down from the top, all the way around, kind of like folding over itself until you get down. Once you get to the chest, so at that point in time, it no longer is a yad. Hamargil, now, what if you go the other direction? Meaning, same thing, flask, but instead of starting from the neck, you make an incision around the foot, and you're peeling it now from the foot, headbound. Kulo chibur l'tuma l'tame, sorry, l'tame u'l'tame u'l'tame. Okay, at that point in time, it's still going to be a chibur, it's still going to be considered a connection. It's still going to be basically a yad. Okay, because the chest apparently is the trickiest part to flay. So if you're starting from the feet and you're going headbound, so it's considered a yad all the way until you get all the way to the top. Okay. Or sha'ala tzavar, what about the hide that's actually around the neck itself? Right? You ever see a cow? It's barely connected. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer Eino Chibur. So according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, even while it's on, it's not connected. Meaning because the hide around the neck, it's such a loose attachment. Basically, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, I don't view it as connected even when it is connected. The Chachamim Omer Chibur Ashiyav Sheskula, and the Chachamim disagree. Meaning no, the hide around the neck, until you disconnect, until you actually flay it, it's considered connected to the neck. Okay. Now we're going back to the first case of the Mishnah, and that's the case of the Shtiach. Okay? And in that case, the Gemara's question over here is like this. Look, okay, if you will. Okay, here's our animal, and here is now us beginning to take off the hide. So we said that once you get to a Kedei Achiza, right, the amount that you need to grab, it's still a yad. Anything more than that, it basically is no longer a yad. It's no longer a handle. So the Gemara's question is very simple. Meaning, once you get past the Kedei Achiza, so does it convey Tumah to the animal anymore? Or, if the animal's Tameh, does it export Tumah from the animal to you? So, Mikan ve'elach maya amarav, tara mufsha. So Rav's position is very simple. No. Meaning, once you've now pulled more than a Kedei Achiza, it's no longer a yad, it's no longer a handle. Okay. Later on, the Gemara will point out, right, as we continue to pull, the part that's right next to the hide, the tefach that's still next to the hide, that's going to be a handle, right? Because I could still grab from here to pull off. But this part over here that's now far away from the hide, that's nothing. Okay. Rav Asi amar tefach asamach labasar tamei. Rav Asi says, no, the tefach that is proximate to the meat, that's going to be tamei. Okay, good. Meisvei. The Gemara challenges. So again, so we have a machlokus between Rav and Rav Asi. By the way, I think I said it incorrectly. Meaning, according to Rav, once I'm pulled it away more than a Kedei Achiza, none of the hide, even the part that's immediate proximate to the hide, none of the hide is going to give off Tumah, meaning none of it is considered a Yad. All right, let's do a little bit more for today. Meisvei. Hamavshe Kishir Hazer. Okay, the Braisa says, once you go beyond the shear, so your nogea b'mufshat, you touch the part that's disconnected from the animal, it's tahor. Sounds just like Rav. The Gemara asked the question, Gemara says, no, lo labar mitefach samach labasar. Now, the Braisa over here is basically saying, any part of the hide that is far away from the box. But the hide that is one tefach within the basar is still going to be a yad. Tashma, or shekeneged habasar tamei, or shekeneged habasar tamei, habetefach hasamach labasar tahor. Again, the Braisa sounds just like Rav, because the Braisa says that any hide that's still connected to the basar, that's going to be tamei, meaning that'll be conductor. But anything that's been separated, even the tefach that is right next to the hide, that's going to be tahor. So Tana, so the Gemara says, again, in defense of Rav Asi, called tefach, hasamach labasar, or shekeneged abasar karilei. No, the one tefach that's next to the basar is considered, or it's considered hide that's connected to the basar. Tashma. Gemara is going to do this one more time. Here, this braisa candidly expresses the view of Rav and not the view of Rav Asi. This braisa says even that one tefach that's proximate to the hide, that's nothing. So again, sounds like Rav questions Rav Asi. So the Gemara says, well, that's talking about Tefach Rishon. What does that mean? So Rashi explains it basically means like this. Meaning, when I pull out that one Tefach, and then I go a little bit more than that, so I'm still holding this end over here. This is nothing. This is my handle. This is nothing. That's the Tefach Rishon. Once I start pulling out more, so then I view the Tefach that's next to the hide as considered a Yad. Okay. Essentially, okay, we're going to have to stop over here. We ran out of time this morning. Essentially, now basically goes like this. When I'm pulling the hide off the animal, the machlokes between Rav and Rav Asi is like this. The portion that I pull off, is it a yad or is it not a yad? So Rav will tell you, no longer a yad. Now, how do you understand Rav? It basically goes like this. From Rav's standpoint, what's a yad? A yad is something that allows me to hold the meat. If it no longer allows me to hold the meat, so then it's no longer a yad. It's very simple. So from Rav's perspective, once I pull the hide off more than a kedei achiza, this hide now that's disconnected, it's totally detached. It's not connected at all anymore. Even though it may be physically connected, but no longer serves as a yad. Good. That's the position of Rav. Rav Asi will tell you no. Rav Asi says, yeah, the part all the way out here, you're right. But the tefach that's right next to the hide, that's still a yad. Meaning because I could still hold this portion in order to pick up the meat, so that one tefach is still considered a yad. Okay? That's the machlokes between Rav and Rav Asi. Most of the braises that were quoted support Rav, not Rav Asi. And the Gemara still was defensive in the position of Rav Asi. I think what we'll do is we're going to add a shiur for tomorrow for Shabbos because we're really behind. We need to catch up. So before Mincha. I think what we'll do is we'll meet an hour before Mincha. I'll make an announcement over Shabbos, but we'll meet an hour before Mincha just so we can catch up.